Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hey, everybody, and welcome again to the weekly edition of Wall Street Unspun. I'm Peter Schiff, your host. I'm president of Euro Pacific Capital. Speaking to you again live from Newport Beach, California. I'm out in the California office for the next couple of weeks, and I'm glad to be here. Welcome aboard. Anyway, today I really want to talk about what's been happening in the markets. We've had some very significant technical movements in the markets, stocks, bonds, currencies, commodities, you name it. We've had substantial moves, you know, all in the direction that we've been expecting and that we've been positioning our clients for. You know, this is going to be, I think, a very important program from that respect. We really need to hammer home some of the issues that we've been talking about for the past 4 or 5 months. Those of you who are new to this broadcast, I really encourage you to visit my website. That's www.europac, E-U-R-O-P-A-C.net, europac.net. Go to the archive session and listen to the radio shows that you might have missed. You know, if you're listening on shortwave, you can get all the radio shows that you might have missed on my archive on my website at europac.net. Go there, listen to this stuff. You know, also, again, I want to give out the telephone number for your calls on any topics related to the market, the dollar, currencies, commodities, housing, the economy. Give me a call. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Your calls are welcome. The lines are open, so give me a call. In any event, and again, the website is www.europac.net for the archives. Well, anyway, the big news that I think has happened over the past week has been the huge increase in interest rates. Number one. Particularly the 10-year government bond, but we've seen substantial backup in the 30-year rate. Very severe technical damage done to the bond market. And you know, I've been anticipating that this trend towards higher bond prices and lower interest rates would end. Also, the yield curve, which had been narrowing and narrowing, widened dramatically over the past week, and I expect that to continue. I think that this movement towards the narrowing of the yield curve, flirting with inversion, was more of a head fake. I think you're going to see a pretty big, you know, widening of that curve, but it's going to widen with short end rates and long rates moving higher. Both the, you know, rates are going to move higher on the short end and the long end. Ultimately, we may yet get an inverted yield curve, but it's going to be from a much, much higher level of interest rates than those which prevail today, and that has dramatic adverse effects on the economy, and particularly asset markets like stocks and residential real estate, which are being propped up by low interest rates. But also, again, I wanted to remind everybody that this program has a purpose. It's not simply to educate you about the many problems confronting the U.S. economy, but it's to present individual solutions, a way out. And that way out is to get out of the dollar, to get out of it while you can, to use your U.S. currency now while you can still spend it around the world, while central banks are still foolishly propping up its value, and use those dollars to accumulate conservative income-generating assets around the world in countries where the currencies are appreciating. Many of you know, and many of my clients know, that one of our favorite countries has been New Zealand. We've been making many income investments in New Zealand for years. Today, the New Zealand Reserve Bank raised interest rates. The short-term rate in New Zealand is now 6.75%. That's 6.75% compared to, what, 2.5% in the United States? Unemployment in New Zealand is at a 19-year low of 3.9%. So, I mean, they've got an economy in good shape. And the currency, today, the New Zealand dollar is at a 23-year high in excess of 74 cents. Now, many of you listening to this broadcast who are clients of ours remember that a few years ago, the New Zealand dollar was trading for less than 40 cents. And many of you know that because you bought New Zealand dollars for less than 40 cents. We bought assets in New Zealand. The currency is almost doubled. It's up 80% over those three-year period. You know, that means conservative investments that we made 3 years ago in dollars have increased in value in dollar terms 80% merely based on the exchange rate alone, forgetting about the fact that some of these assets appreciated in local currency terms, and of course they've been paying big dividends over the years. That's why we bought them in the first place, or one of the reasons. But you can have substantial appreciation in dollars by getting your money into these currencies. Now, certainly the New Zealand dollar is not as great a bargain at 74 cents as it was 3 years ago at 40 cents. But the problem is the U.S. dollar is still overvalued. The real problems that confronted the U.S. economy that I looked at 3 years ago that caused me to recommend New Zealand dollars to my clients, not only are those problems still here today, but they've increased in severity and in number over the past few years. So I think now, I think from a fundamental point of view, from a macroeconomic point of view, it makes even more sense to get out of U.S. dollars and into New Zealand dollars or other currencies than it did 3 years ago. Even though in an absolute sense, the New Zealand dollar isn't as cheap as it was, you know, I think the fundamentals for the United States have deteriorated so much in the last 3 years that the New Zealand dollar of 74 cents today, given the situation of the U.S. economy, could actually be a better bargain than it was 3 years ago when the price was a lot lower, because the fundamentals for the U.S. economy have deteriorated so much. The asset bubbles have inflated that much more. We as a nation have gone that much deeper into debt. Think of all the manufacturing jobs that have evaporated in the last 3 years. Think of all the mortgage debt and consumer debt that has been accumulated by Americans. Think of all the money and credit that the Federal Reserve and the banking system have created over the past few years. All of that is a big negative for the dollar. But anyway, so the New Zealand rates were risen, I guess it was a couple hours ago. But anyway, let's get back to some of the events that happened in the market this week. I mean, first we got the interest rates, right? I said interest rates rose sharply. Look at oil prices. Oil prices today, I think I saw crude oil, the nearby month, trade almost to $56 a barrel. I think we settled up back in the high 54s. But we hit almost $56 a barrel. That would be a new record, or tying the record that we set a while back before oil went all the way back down to $40.20. And quickly we rebounded. But oil prices appear like they're headed higher. We could see the $60 mark per barrel for oil in the very near term. And $60 isn't going to represent a ceiling. It's just going to be another stop on the road to higher prices. Commodity prices. Look at the CRB index. I've been talking about this index since we first started the broadcast. The CRB index hit a 25-year high this week. It surged, you know, it's above 310. The index is up 80% in the last 3 years. In 2001, the CRB index was at 180. It's over 310. That's an incredible surge in commodity prices, and with no top in sight. Right, I mean, it's not like we're over. I think we're going to take out the high from the mid-70s, and we're just going a lot higher. Copper prices. The price of copper is over $150 a pound. You know, for the first time ever, the melt value on a pre-1981 penny, the copper melt value exceeds the face value of the coin, making the penny, a pre-1981 penny, just about the only legitimate value that you're going to find in U.S. currency. You know, you can go out and get a penny right now, and the intrinsic value of that penny is worth more than one penny, which means it's really a no-risk investment for you other than the time it takes to collect them and store them. Because, right, the penny can never be worth less than a penny, but it can be worth a lot more if copper prices keep rising. You know, if copper prices fall, you can't lose any money because you got a penny. But, you know, so that's the most valuable maybe the most legitimate coin that the United States produces. Well, we don't produce it anymore. So you can't confuse the pre-1981 penny with the current penny that they make, which is made mostly of zinc. It'll take a while before the zinc content of that penny exceeds its face value, but one day it will. I mean, there's no question about it that the dollar is going to collapse, and you know, even all these tokens that the U.S. Mint makes now that are clad with these base metals, They're all probably going to be worth more than their face value at some point. But for sure, the best value out there is the pre-1981 penny. Now, obviously, if you can find, you know, pre-1963 quarters or dimes, now, they're worth way more than their face value because of their silver content. But that's been the case for, you know, 30 years. So it's very rare that you'll find, you know, one of those babies in circulation. Because, you know, there's a famous law in economics, Gresham's Law, that states that good money, that bad money drives out good money. So whenever there's bad money and good money that both circulate side by side, the good money gets hoarded, and the only money that circulates is bad money. So it's very difficult to find any of those legitimate pre-1963 coins circulating. And probably in a few years, you'll have a hard time finding pre-1981 pennies circulating because they would have all been taken and melted down. But in any event, so you have copper prices, oil prices, the CRB surging. Look what's happening to the dollar index. You remember I was talking at length about the head fake and the rally in the dollar index. There were a lot of people out there, technicians calling for a dollar rally, saying that there's this level on the dollar of 80, this 80 level that, you know, was support back in the early 1990s, and they were thinking that there would be a, you know, a lot of a support in the dollar index at that 80 level, and, you know, many people were saying that it's time to get out of it, you know, get back into the dollar, because of that level. And the dollar did rally a little bit, and I told my clients not to worry about it. In fact, the dollar index rallied from, you know, it was just over 80. The low of the dollar index back in December of last year was about 80.5. And about a month ago, the dollar index had risen to above 85, about 85.5. So you had about a 6% rise in the value of the dollar. And that 6% rise faked out a lot of people. It scared a lot of the weaker players. A lot of people were tempted to get back into the dollar, thinking that there was going to be a very substantial rise. And I assured my clients and the listeners of this broadcast that that wasn't the case, that people who were taking a technical picture of the dollar index and looking back to the support in the early 1990s were making a fundamental mistake of overlooking the significant damage to the economy and to the fundamental picture for the dollar, that support wasn't going to hold. And I also thought that technically the more dominant movement was the recent three-year trend that had a lot of momentum behind it, and I didn't think that a 10 or 15-year-old support level was going to be enough to hold off the forces for 3 years of momentum. And if anything, once that 80 level, that support level is violated in the dollar, and I fully expect that to happen relatively soon, I think that 80 level on the dollar index is going to be very, very substantial overhead resistance for the dollar index, with any rally back up anywhere near 80 being sold into heavily, which makes me think that once it really breaks through 80, we might never see 80 again. Kind of like once oil broke through 40, we never saw 40 again. It dipped back to it briefly for one day to 40.20, and before you can blink your eye, we're back at $55 a barrel. I think the same thing might happen with the dollar index once it breaches the support from 1990 to 1995, and moves into uncharted territory and moves dramatically lower. Well, you know where the dollar index is today? It's back down to 81.5. It's now less than 2% off its record low from December, or its low from December of last year. So almost all of the gains, better than 80% of the gains from 80.5 to 85.5 have now been surrendered. And we're almost at the lows. In fact, if you look at where the dollar index is now, there's only been 5 days of last year where it actually traded lower than it is today in late December. And then there were a few days where it traded at this level in early December. But other than that, there's only been maybe a total of 8 or 9 days in the last 5 years where the dollar index has been as low as it is today. And no, it's actually, I can count them right here, 8 days. There's only 8 days where it's been this low. And I think, you know, it could really crack from here. So I think those of you who stayed in your short dollar positions, stayed in your long foreign currency positions, you did the right thing. You weren't dissuaded by any of the newfound dollar bulls, even some of the dollar bears, some of the people who, you know, who share my views on the long-term problems with the dollar, got head faked by this. We're thinking that there was going to be a meaningful correction in the dollar. and got a little nervous and got into the dollar. And I thought that was actually a good contrarian indicator. Now, also, I mentioned a lot of my clients own a bond fund called the Aberdeen Asia Pacific Income Fund. We've owned it for clients for 3 years. You know, we started buying that fund for clients when it was about $4 a share. I actually own the fund myself. I actually have about $1 million in it, so I've got a substantial position in it. But in any event, personally, but we started buying it at about $4 a share back in 2000. And it's around $6.70 right now. It was as high as $7 a year ago. But the interesting aspect of this is a year ago, or a little over a year ago, when the shares were at $7, they were trading at a 4% premium to their net asset value. Today, the shares are at a 2% discount to their net asset value. So the public is still nervous about they think the dollar's going to go up. The net asset value on the Aberdeen Bond Fund today is basically the highest it's ever been since we've owned it. It's actually worth more intrinsically today than it was a year ago when the shares were trading for over $7 a piece, and today they're below $7.70. So I look at the fact that the public is still not paying a premium for a closed-end Australian government bond fund, basically the only one that exists in the United States. The fact that the public is not bidding this to a premium is a good indication that the individual investor sentiment is still bullish for the dollar, in spite of the fact of the overwhelming negative fundamentals associated with the dollar. And a lot of people think that everybody thinks the dollar is going to go down. That was one of the other reasons that some people thought we were going to have a rally in the dollar. The opinion was that the average American, that everybody thinks the dollar is going to go down. It's universally accepted that all the people who could sell could have sold. Well, if obviously that's ridiculous, if the majority of Americans believe that the dollar had no place to go but down, the only closed-end Australian government bond fund in the United States would be trading at a premium. It wouldn't be trading at a discount. But that's just one of many examples. I mean, again, we talked about the cocktail party example where, I never go to a party or I'm never in a restaurant. I don't overhear conversations of people talking about all the money they made in the Swiss franc or the New Zealand dollar or, all the gold that they bought or the zinc. Look at copper hitting these new highs. Look at nickel prices. I mean, how many of you are at parties and you're overhearing discussions with your friends talking about the money they made in copper or nickel or how much, no, nobody's in this. I mean, if this is a mania, no one's participating in it. These markets are stealth bull markets. Maybe they talk about them occasionally, but very few people have acted other than, certainly Euro-Pacific clients. Our clients have acted about it because we've been, pounding the table on commodities and foreign currencies for years. And so our clients have done that. But the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of Americans, despite these enormous moves in these markets over the last few years, have done nothing. Despite an 80% increase in commodity prices in the last 3 years, the average American has zero exposure to this market. They've done nothing. They're not investing in the natural resource markets. They're not investing in Australia or New Zealand. They're not investing in Canada. You turn on CNBC, how much time do they give to these markets? None. Anyway, I want to pause briefly, take a little break, and play a message about Euro-Pacific Capital, how you can get a hold of us, what we're doing, so you can protect yourself and protect your wealth from a falling dollar and inflation. And remember our motto at Euro-Pacific Capital is Euro-Pacific Capital because there's a bull market somewhere. Well, there is a bull market somewhere, but it's not in the United States. So here's the message, and we'll pick up at the other end of the break.
Euro-Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro-Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
we're back. And you know, that number again to call for Euro Pacific Capital is 800-727-7922. And I do have brokers on those phones now. They're here in my office in California. They're there to take your calls to discuss specifically your investment situation, to go over your portfolio, your assets, and to propose a solution to help create a diversified portfolio specifically tailored to your needs to take into account our outlook for the U.S. economy and the dollar. So give us a call. It's 800-727-7922. And again, let me remind our listeners that this is a call-in program. I invite your calls. Please call and ask questions, make comments. If you disagree with something I'm saying, go ahead and feel free to disagree and introduce some controversy. The telephone number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. The lines are open, so give us a call. You should get right through. Anyway, picking up on what happened in the markets recently, the stock market also gave way. We had some very substantial declines in the markets. I mean, nothing huge, but I mean bigger than normal in the last week. And you know, I think the market is starting to take notice. You know, we had a big move up in interest rates, a move up in oil prices, a weakening in the dollar. And maybe this is starting to weigh on the market. And again, I think the most significant thing is interest rates have been rising as the dollar has been falling and oil prices have been rising. That's the normal. That's what you would expect. But for the last couple of years, that's not what's been happening. Bond prices have been rallying. Interest rates have been falling, even though commodities have been rising, which historically there's a big negative correlation between bonds and commodities. Also the dollar. Normally there's a very strong correlation positive with the dollar. The dollar rises, bonds rise. Dollar falls, bond falls. That hasn't been the case recently. Now, for the last week, these markets have kind of recoupled. The bonds are going in the same direction as the dollar, and they're going in the opposite direction of commodities, particularly oil. That's what should happen. Now, let's assume, and this is what was perplexing Alan Greenspan. He used the word conundrum. Well, maybe that's solved now. Maybe we've got a reestablishment of these relationships. And if that's the case, then look out below, because, you know, the bubble found its pin. You know, if we see the bond market continue to fall sharply as it has, and it certainly could, that's it. That's the pin that's going to prick this bubble, because rising rates are going to be the kiss of death for the stock market, for the economy, for the housing bubble, and even for the dollar. And this is something that may sound counterintuitive. You know, what people think is that higher interest rates are going to be good for the dollar. Not anymore. Not in the U.S. economy that's dependent on low interest rates. Because when you raise short-term interest rates and you bust a bubble economy that's 80% consumer spending, when you take the assets collateralizing the debt that's financing that consumption, residential real estate and stocks, and you knock the value out with higher interest rates, this economy is going to implode like a house of cards, you know, figuratively and literally. And when that happens, there's going to be such a capital flight out of the dollar that the rising interest rates aren't going to be enough to offset that. That the economy is going to weaken so much, and it's actually going to set off a self-perpetuating spiral. Because the weaker the economy goes, the higher interest rates are going to go, not the lower. And the Fed is not going to be able to lower interest rates in the face of massive capital flight and skyrocketing consumer prices. Its back is going to be to the wall. So this is a really dangerous situation that we're on the precipice of. And this big backup in interest rates happening at a time where gold prices, you know, I talked about that again recently, last couple of episodes, that gold was breaking out. We're back above $440 an ounce, headed back to that 450 level. We take out the highs on gold. I mean, all of this could be coming together for the perfect storm. Gold prices breaking out. We could hit 500 very quickly. The dollar very close to cracking long-term support at 80. Maybe the dollar cracks, gold goes up, oil breaks through, and it finally, boom, you know, the stock market and the bond market give way, and this could be happening very, very shortly. I mean, stay tuned to this program. You know, we could be bringing you some very dramatic economic events in the coming weeks. I mean, we are actually pretty close. I still think that if this bond market really gives way, that a major stock market decline similar to 1987, October 87, could be in the making. And, you know, I haven't said that once on this program. I haven't said that there was any kind of short-term risk of a crash-style event, but that could be coming. We have to monitor that over the next couple of weeks, but it certainly can be precipitated by a sharp rise in interest rates and simultaneously occurrence of a breakdown in the dollar index and a breakout in gold. I mean, all these things could be happening. But the important thing that you do as a listener of this broadcast is just don't be an observer of this thing, because if you've got U.S. dollar assets, if you've got pensions or money in CDs or in the bank, you're not just a disinterested bystander, you're a participant. I mean, you're a real-life participant that is going to have his financial life, his retirement plans ruined if what I'm suggesting comes to pass. And so what you want to do is you don't just want to watch this, right? You want to act. You want to take action. You want to preserve your wealth. You want to get your money into the types of investments that I've been recommending so that in the event that I'm right, you're protected. And the beauty of my strategies is if even if I'm wrong, you're probably still going to have a good result. I mean, look, the clients who invested with me 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, I mean, have had fantastic returns in their portfolios, even though the U.S. economy is still humming along. Everybody thinks things are still great, yet my clients did very, very well. Now, I mean, you know, again, you know, because they did well in the past doesn't guarantee they're going to do well in the future. But my point is that even without the U.S. economy falling apart, my strategies, which were designed for that to happen, produced very, very good returns. So, you know, going forward, the same thing could happen if the economy doesn't fall apart. But if it does fall apart, which is what I believe, then the returns are going to be far greater than if we continue to grow the bubble the way that we've been doing it. But that's what it is. I mean, make no mistake about it. We do not have a viable economy in the United States. It is a bubble, and all bubbles burst. Sooner or later, they all burst. You know, some of them could be blown up bigger than others, and sometimes when you're looking at a bubble, you can underestimate just how much air you can get into it before the thing bursts, but they all burst. You know, I also want to talk a little bit about one of my favorite bubbles, and I've mentioned it on many times on this broadcast, and that's the housing bubble. You know, the housing bubble. And the housing bubble is bigger than any bubble that preceded it. I mean, we obviously had a bubble in NASDAQ, and certainly a bigger bubble in a component of the NASDAQ, the dot-coms. Everybody knows about that. The housing bubble is bigger. It involves more people. It involves more money. And unlike the internet bubble, the gains in the housing bubble have already been monetized and spent. Right? People weren't taking cash out financing of their internet portfolios, but they are on their real estate portfolios. The entire U.S. economy wasn't driven based on the NASDAQ bubble, although it was certainly influenced in major part by it, but nothing like the influence of the equity in residential real estate. But a statistic that I read, and I was reading this article on Prudent Bear, which is a good website, prudentbear.com. I actually was reading this thing, and I was laughing out loud at myself. It was a good, the title of the article was, "We Don't Need No Stinking Renters," was the title. And basically what it's referring to is the fact that people are buying real estate as investment property, even though they can't find tenants for it. And even if they can find tenants, the rents that they're able to charge are not enough to cover the cost of the mortgage, even if they have an interest-only arm. But the thing is, people say they don't care about the rents. They're going to make it on the appreciation, which is, you know, the same attitude people had in the internet stocks. But again, here's what you have to realize. If somebody goes out there and buys, you know, a single-family house for $500,000, and it's at a negative cash flow, let's say after they get a tenant, you know, they're losing $2,000 a month, but they think they're going to make a profit on it. What they're basically saying is they're willing to lose $2,000 a month because they think in a couple of years they're going to find some greater fool who's willing to buy it and lose $3,000 or $4,000 a month. And he's only going to buy it because he thinks there's another fool that's going to lose $5,000 a month. Well, the problem with that logic is sometimes you're the last fool, and there is no greater fool, and you're stuck with a money-losing asset when the music stops. And that's what's going to happen to the real estate market. But here's the statistic. One of the statistics that was in that article on Prudent Bear, We Don't Need No Stinking Renters, one of the articles talked about a new study that just came out last week that showed, and I don't know these numbers exactly, but I think it was either 36 or 38%, but it was greater than a third of all the single-family dwellings, either condos or houses, that were purchased last year, those real estate transactions, over a third of them were purchased for either investment purposes or as vacation homes. That is an alarming statistic. It was almost over 20% of them were for investments. People were buying houses not to occupy them, but to rent them out. And here, as I thought, was something that was very funny, too, that the distance, the average distance between a vacation house and the primary residence, the average distance was 45 miles. 45 miles. What is that, an hour away? I don't know about you, but I mean, there's not that many people that take vacations an hour away from their house. I mean, what's the point? I mean, you can go there and come back in the same day. You don't need to buy a house an hour from your house, 45 minutes from your house. But if the average was 45 minutes, now maybe there were some legitimate vacation homes that were, you know, 2 or 3 hours away. But that means the average 45 minutes, there are other people that are buying vacation homes that are right around the corner, right up the street. I mean, what do? They, you know, they pack up a suitcase, you know, drive around the block to their vacation house. I mean, the reality is people are calling these vacation houses. The only reason they're buying it is because they think they're going to appreciate. They're speculating. They are speculating. There is rampant speculation in the real estate market, unlike any speculation that has ever taken place, I think, across the United States. And I hear it in people's voices. I mean, I have a lot of clients. I got thousands of clients, right? I talk to them every day. And every day I talk to somebody who is flipping real estate or buying real estate. And whenever I tell them, I had a conversation today, a woman called me up, and she said, well, you're right, real estate might go down, but not in my town, not where I'm buying it. See, everybody thinks there's something different about where they're buying their property, whether it's waterfront or lakefront or, you know, on this street or that street or on the hillside or in this, you know, everybody thinks that it's different where they are. That even if it goes down someplace else, it's never going to go down where I'm buying it. Everybody has this attitude. You know, there was another article, too, which I read on a couple of sites, but also was on the Prudent Bear site, talking about how can there be two bubbles, right? We have the stock market bubble and then immediately followed by the real estate bubble. And the argument was, how can we have these two bubbles so close together? I mean, doesn't anybody learn anything? I mean, right, you would expect, I mean, fool me once, you know, fool me twice. How can people just go from bubble to bubble without missing a beat? And kind of the answer was, it's not really the same people. That the tech bubble was more of a testosterone bubble. Sure, there were women involved, but by and large, it was more of a male thing. A lot of the wives kind of went along with it, but the husbands lost the money, and they got a lot of, you know, crap from their wives. But that the real estate bubble is estrogen driven. It's mainly the women who, I mean, men are doing it too, but the women are even more involved than the men. And the women were basically yelling at their husbands for all the money that they lost in the stock market, and they kind of took control and said, look, we're going to invest in real estate. And, women, they have the natural nesting, but also, I mean, there's something psychological. If you can get a woman to believe that, you know, redoing her kitchen is an investment, you know, of course she's going to do it. I mean, that's what people actually think, that just by putting in granite countertops and fancy appliances that you're making an investment in your house. By putting in, you know, marble in your bathroom, that's an investment. I mean, what a great idea, right? That you can consume money and invest it at the same time. But this is what people think. So, I mean, this is a huge, huge bubble with tremendous ramifications. And this statistic that just came out on all the people who are speculating, because these people who are buying investment properties, they're getting negative returns. The rental returns are negative. They're losing money every month. They're only buying because they think prices are going to go up. Now, if that's not a speculative bubble, what is? And the amazing thing is guys like Alan Greenspan at the Fed and other people are sitting there telling us that there's absolutely no sign of speculation in the real estate market. Well, look at it. I mean, again, just like I called Alan Greenspan Mr. Magoo a couple of years ago when he was stating that there were no signs of inflation. He still sees no signs of inflation despite a 25-year high in commodity prices, despite housing prices. Last year, housing prices went up by the biggest amount of any year since 1979. So we got commodity prices where they were in the late 70s, housing prices rising like it was in the late 70s. What we had in the late 70s was a lot of inflation. That's why that was happening. All the same stuff is happening again. The dollar's falling through the floor. Prices are rising. And Alan Greenspan sees no sign of inflation, and he sees no sign of a housing bubble, despite these statistics. Obviously, he doesn't see them because they're not there. He doesn't see him because he's not looking, or he's lying, or he's blind as a bat. Anyway, we got a caller on the line. We got Victor calling in from Michigan. Go ahead, Victor.
Morgan Stanley, on one of their websites, has a fund. It's called the EAFE. It tracks the European, Australian, and Asian stock markets. I have a chance to be in that, you know, through the company I work for. Is that a good thing? Would that?
Well, I mean, it might be the best of a bad situation. I don't know what else your choices are. The reason I don't advise those type of investments for my clients is because, like New Zealand, for example, I mean, if you buy the New Zealand index, 40% of it is one stock, New Zealand Telecom. I mean, that's okay. It's a good company. But, I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, you're getting, you know, and when you buy these other big stocks, you know, big indices, the biggest companies that dominate it are big exporters, big multinational companies. Many of these companies are going to have their earnings fall when the dollar declines. So, you know, the best stocks to buy around the world happen to be the smaller cap individual names that pay big dividends that are insulated from what happens in the United States. They don't trade with the United States. Their earnings aren't emanating from the United States. They generally, you know, and they're not the types of funds that you're going to get stocks that you're going to get big exposure to in those big indexes. So if you can, open up an account with us. We can get you these stocks directly, the best of it. If you don't have the ability, if your money is stuck in an employer plan, that might be the best option of those that are available to you. I don't know what the other ones are. But it's certainly better than keeping your money in either U.S. stocks or U.S. bonds.
Thank you.
Anything beats that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure thing. Anyway, again, that's our first call. Normally I have more calls by now. I hope that doesn't mean that people aren't listening. But anyway, give me a call. The lines are open. I'll give you the toll-free number. Again, it's 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. Now, the big economic event that's coming on Friday, the big number, at least in my, you know, the way I look at it, I mean, the way CNBC looks at it, I mean, they couldn't care less about this number or most of the mainstream Wall Street. But again, I think it's the single most important number bearing on the health of the U.S. economy or lack thereof. And that is the merchandise trade or the overall trade numbers. Those numbers come out on Friday. And we'll see if we've risen. I think the consensus is for about a $56 billion deficit for the month, which, you know, that's such a huge deficit that not too long ago that was what our deficit was in a year. Now we make that deficit every month. The record is about $60 billion, but we'll see. Maybe we'll end up beating the estimate and take out that record. China just came out today with a huge increase. China had a trade deficit not too long ago. Now they have a big surplus. Of course, they always had a surplus with the United States, but now they have a surplus with the whole world, and the Chinese economy is hitting on all cylinders right now. And that's going to, again, put more and more pressure on the Chinese government as their current account deficit or their trade balance improves even more. And, of course, as their trade surplus with the United States, you know, rises into the stratosphere, that they've got to let their currency, the renminbi, rise, which is one of the, I think, one of the no-brainer trades out there, right, that the renminbi is going to rise eventually. I mean, everybody even will admit that at some point in the future it's got to rise. I mean, you know, I mean, it has to. I think what most people don't understand is how much it's going to rise. I think people underestimate the magnitude to which that currency is going to gain against the dollar when it is unshackled from that chain. But we've got ways to play that. I mean, we are buying for our clients stocks where, you know, almost all their revenue comes from mainland China. Stocks that trade on the Hong Kong Exchange, conservative stocks paying good dividends, it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. Because all you're doing is collecting dividends while you're waiting for the currency to be floated and the shares to appreciate dramatically when that happens. Because right now you're taking advantage of a government subsidy, an artificially controlled price, right? If you think of a beach ball being held underneath the water, the beach ball is the renminbi. And the hands pressing upon it are the Central Bank of China. And once they remove their hands, the beach ball is going to shoot to the surface. So by buying these stocks denominated in that currency now, you're getting on the beach ball before they take their hands away. And so you just sit on it. I think it's one of the no-brainer trades around. And the people that miss out on that opportunity are going to be kicking themselves. And how could I have missed that? I mean, it's taking candy from a baby. But anyway, to really discuss these strategies and learn the risks and the rewards, specifically the stocks that we like, give us a call. Again, 800 727-7922. It's Euro Pacific Capital. We're licensed now in all 50 states, by the way. Finally, you know, I mentioned that North Dakota, we weren't in North Dakota. We're in it now. So we're now licensed to do business in all 50 states. We can save Americans no matter where they live. Any Americans, any of you listening to this program, you've got money in the bank, you've got money in stocks and bonds, you're taking tremendous risks, whether you know it or not. You need to call us. We can help you. We have strategies designed to help protect your wealth. Give us a call. In fact, let me take another break and play a message from Euro Pacific Capital about how to get a hold of us, and we'll pick it back up to take your calls and your comments for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back for the final segment, Wall Street Unspun. Hey, this is Peter Schiff. We've got a caller on the line from New York. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Peter. I was wondering if you had a chance to look at the article on Barron's with Quinlan's from Bank of America's comment.
You emailed me about that article, didn't you?
Yes.
You know, I was meaning to look at it. I didn't get a chance, but why don't you briefly, if you can...
Sure. He basically argues that foreign direct investment in the United States has exceeded what it has been in China, and that it's basically a positive. Here I'll quote you right from the article. It says, foreign direct investment is a composite of unsentimental business decisions, and there is no mystery why foreign multinationals find the U.S. more attractive than China, in Quinlan's view. America has greater per capita wealth, a world-class infrastructure, an entrepreneurial culture, leadership in technology innovation, large and liquid financial structures, minimal government interference, and a transparent legal system.
First of all, I don't know where he's living, where he has minimal government interference, but they're interfering the hell out of me. I mean, I'm getting taxed and regulated to death, so I don't know where he's making the point that we have minimal government interference. In fact, recently, the United States, I mean, I still think that the survey overestimates the United States, but the Heritage Foundation comes out with it, at the series of economic freedom, and the United States was tied for 13th. So there are 12 other countries that the Heritage Foundation thinks are freer than the United States, economically speaking. I would argue there's far more than that. I think the study is still a little biased in favor of the U.S., but even they have us as number 13, so I don't know what he's talking about there. But when he's talking about foreign direct investment, so is he then excluding purchases of debt instruments like government debt or collateralized mortgage obligations or collateralized the consumer loans?
Yeah, no, you know, I don't know. I know that his big thing in terms of the trade deficit, he believes that's going to correct because of the emerging markets, like with Ukraine, Moldavia, and the Baltic states.
Yeah, well, that's kind of foolish, because he thinks, okay, there's going to be demand from those markets. And see, here's the idea. If all of a sudden the people in these emerging markets get more income and more wealth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they shop in the United States? They're going to shop in China just like everybody else. It's not like we have all these factories that are ready to turn out all these products if only the people in Moldavia or Yugoslavia or whatever would want to buy them from us.
Well, see, you mentioned that you were investing a lot in companies that did business in China, and my perception of China is that there's an amazing amount of overcapacity that's being built there. And
no, there probably is overcapacity. There's no question about it. There's overcapacity in certain areas, and there's probably undercapacity in others, because the Chinese right now are spending too much of their resources trying to satisfy the demands of Americans who have no way of paying for that, as opposed to trying to satisfy the demands of their own citizens. So there's certainly a lot of malinvestments in China, no question about it. But, you know, the United States is in far worse shape than China, and when it hits the fan, China is going to emerge from this period of time, I think, as the leading economy in the world. I think the Chinese citizens are going to see a dramatic increase in their standards of living. Unfortunately, the opposite fate is going to befall Americans. We're going to come out of this as a second-tier economy, and hopefully even second-tier. We might drop lower than that, and the average American is going to suffer a very dramatic erosion of their standard of living.
Well, I saw on your website you're one of a few companies that offers the Rogers Raw Material Index Fund.
Yeah, in fact, I was the first person that did. In fact, I was one of the two firms that helped them break escrow on the original fund. And one of the reasons they have an individual fund is Rogers originally set out a fund that was for institutions that had like a $200,000 minimum. And I had a lot of clients I thought wanted to buy it, but they couldn't meet the minimum. So I called them up and I said, hey, can't you come out with a version? And it took them years to do it. It took them like 4 years or 3 years, but they finally did it. But yeah, I mean, it's a way to play the rising price of raw materials. And anybody, if that is sold by prospectus. So if you're interested, you got to call us up. Got to make sure that the shares are blue skied in your state. It's not available in all the states. But you can give us a call at 800-727-7922. Find out if it's available in your state and if it's appropriate for you. And if it is, yeah, we can send you out a prospectus, and it's a good, safe way, I think. There's no leverage involved. You just own the raw materials for the long run.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Yeah, you know, it's very common for people to, you know, confuse America's role in the global economy. And, you know, I'd be interested. I haven't seen these direct investment figures, what our actual direct investment is. It's my take, and until someone shows me otherwise, that the lion's share of money moving in the United States is not being invested in plant equipment. It's being lent to us. That mostly what foreigners are buying are debt instruments, whether they're lending money to the government or lending money to consumers or lending money to corporations. They're not investing here. They're lending us money, which means we have to pay all these loans back. America is going around the world accumulating liabilities while the rest of the world is accumulating assets. And the big difference is you get an income on your assets. You have to pay. You have to service your liabilities. And that is a huge difference. So I think the guy who wrote this story was off base, as are many places. Look, there was another article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. I commented this on my website. If you go to my website at www.europac.net, I read my commentary on the U.S. is as vulnerable as ever to an oil shock. And I already wrote that article about a year ago because somebody else made the same concern, raised the same ridiculous argument a year ago. And I wrote a comment on it then, and so I basically just, you know, changed a little bit and reposted it and sent it out again, because I just wanted to combat this because it's such a mistake. But what this Wall Street Journal reporter alleged was that higher oil prices aren't going to hurt the economy like they did in the past. That even if oil prices go to $70 a barrel, no big deal. You know, it's not going to hurt the economy. And he had two false premises that this was logic was based. One was that since the U.S. economy is a lot less dependent on energy, if energy prices go up, it won't have as big an effect. And he points out that in 1980, 14% of GDP was consumption of energy, and now it's 7%. So, you know, we consume half as less energy, so it's a smaller part of our portfolio. Well, the problem there is the reason that we consume less energy is because all the products that we used to produce ourselves in 1980 are now produced in other countries. Therefore, other countries are using that energy instead of us. So the energy consumption is not part of our GMP, but it is included and incorporated into the price of the goods that we import. So just because we don't manufacture products ourselves doesn't mean an increase in the cost of the energy required by our suppliers to produce those products doesn't mean that we're insulated from that. What's going to happen is we're just going to see prices rise for imports. Now, for the last year or so, the suppliers have been eating some of these higher costs. And instead of passing on higher prices to us, they've taken a hit in their profits. But that's not going to go on forever. they're going to pass these costs on. And so to say that our economy isn't dependent on energy because we don't use it directly, but we rely on the energy that other people use is ridiculous. It's, you know, the guy doesn't, you know, he misses the whole point. And the fact that we don't use any of this energy anymore, that proves my point of how the whole country is deindustrialized. That's our problem. We don't use any energy because we don't make anything. You know, it's a huge problem. But now the other point that he made, which is equally ridiculous, is he said, look, you know, we don't have a lot of factories in this country that use a lot of energy. The major factors in our economy are not energy intensive. And one of the ones that he mentions is financial services. He said, look, a lot of our economy is financial services, and they don't use a lot of energy in financial services. Well, they don't use anything. I mean, they don't use any real, I mean, it's just paper shuffling. But he said, because of that, you know, we don't have to worry about higher oil prices. But here's what this person misses. Yes, financial services aren't energy dependent, but they're very interest rate sensitive, right? And right now, the financial services are booming because credit is available and plentiful and interest rates are low. So everybody can borrow a lot of money. And that's what's driving the financial services end of the economy. Well, if oil prices, as this guy suggests in his article, were to go to $70 a barrel, and I think they'll go there and higher over time, what do you think is going to happen to interest rates? Right? I mean, it's a lot of inflation that's driving oil prices to $70 a barrel. I mean, so if inflation is running at that level and inflation expectations start to match the realities and interest rates start to rise sharply, which they obviously will do in a much higher oil environment, what's going to happen to the financial services sector? What's going to happen to a sector that's completely dependent on access to cheap credit? Right, it's going to implode. Right? I mean, the fact that we have such a huge percentage of our economy in financial services, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but of the S&P 500, 50% of the earnings that emanate from the S&P 500 come from financial services. Right? Either it's directly through financial service companies or indirectly for companies like General Motors and General Electric, which count as manufacturers, but which derive the lion's share of their income from financial services, not manufacturing. So you've got the entire economy, the stock market, dependent on financial services, which are dependent on low interest rates and available credit. That's all going to go away in an environment of $70 oil. So the fact that this guy could say oil prices go to $70, it's not going to hurt the economy. I mean, he didn't do any of his homework. I mean, but why does the Wall Street Journal want to print stuff like this? Because Wall Street eats it up. Wall Street is hungry for these types of faulty logic. Because it comes to a conclusion that they want. The conclusion is everything's great. The conclusion is we can keep on borrowing and spending. We don't have to produce anything, that everything is great. And basically what it allows Wall Street to do is sweep another major economic problem under an already very lumpy rug. And so these theories, you know, they get on the network TV, they get on CNBC, they're in the Wall Street Journal, but they're nonsense. They're nonsense. They're not rooted in reality, and Wall Street embraces them because they like the conclusion, right? They don't. My theory, they don't like the conclusions that I have because they're very bleak. They paint a very different picture. But unfortunately, what I'm saying is the truth, and what Wall Street is saying and the media is giving you is propaganda. But you know, you just got to understand that. You've got to be able to separate that. You know, people have accused me. They say, well, you know, you could have propaganda too. I mean, your firm is specializing in foreign stocks. You've got a reason to try to be gloom and doom. Well, the reason my firm specializes in foreign stocks is because I changed the specialty to foreign stocks back in, I think, 1997 based on my outlook for the dollar. I changed the name of the company. I reemphasized it. The reason I'm specializing in foreign stocks is because I saw the problems, and I said, well, what am I going to do? And I looked around, and I saw how difficult it was for individual investors to get access to foreign markets, so I had to figure out how to do it. And I had to change my firm to meet what I thought was going to happen. You know, if I was bullish on the dollar and bullish on the U.S. economy, it'd be very easy for me to be recommending strategies to profit from that. In fact, it'd be easier. You know, it's easier to give the public what they want than try to convince them that what they want is wrong. Right, and that's what I've always ended up doing in my career is, you know, I don't take the easy way out. I don't just, you know, spoon feed my clients what they want to eat. You know, if the medicine tastes bad but they need it, I take the time to explain to them and force feed it to them. You know, and so I'm taking, this is a very, very difficult path that I'm choosing to go down, but I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do. You know, I'm not going to recommend strategies that I don't believe in because it's easy. So, you know, and hopefully at some point in the future, my outlook will change, hopefully. Hopefully at some point I'll think that the situation is bad enough in the United States, that the dollar is weak enough, that the appropriate reforms have been put into place, that I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And then I'll be recommending that my clients move their money back into U.S. assets. And maybe when that happens, people will be accusing me of the same thing, because, hey, you specialize in U.S., you know. But maybe by then everybody will be trying to get their money out of the dollar and into gold and into commodities. And I'll be one of the few people that's touting the benefits of buying cheap U.S. stocks, at a time when no one else wants them. Maybe, hopefully, let's hope that that does happen, because the alternative is that we never get the reforms that we need, and we never get a rebound in the U.S. economy. I hope that doesn't happen. But in any event, right now, we've got to be sensible. I mean, you've got to be sensible. I've already, protected myself, and But listening to this program, you've got to understand the risks, and you've got to take action, right? You've got to take action and look at what's happening today. Look at where the dollar is. Look at where commodity prices are. Look at what's been happening since my first program, 5 or 6 months ago. Go back there and replay these things. If you don't believe, see how accurate my predictions have been on everything, not just one thing, not just one market, but all the markets. Go and listen to the prior broadcast. But you got to take action. It's not going to do you any good if you listen to this program a month from now and I'm talking about how much value the dollar has lost over the last month and you still have dollars, right? Because you're losing. Don't make the mistake of thinking that just because you don't lose your dollars, you're not losing wealth. You are. Your dollars are losing value. What you care about is not how many dollars you have. What you care about is what those dollars will buy. And if I'm right, those dollars are going to buy far less in even a few short months, but certainly in a few years, than they do today. In fact, the dollar could buy so much less that it could require millions and millions of them, and you still couldn't have a middle-class standard of living. And it's just a piece of paper, and it only has value because of confidence. And believe me, that confidence is misplaced and is on the wane. The dollar right now, I like to call it, I called it the dollar.com during the late 90s. Now I've been calling it a dead currency walking. I think it's on life support. I think that when the foreign central banks wake up, I know the Chinese government keeps coming out and denying that they're going to float the currency, but it's like, Shakespeare, they protest too much. And I found in the history of government action, they generally deny something they're going to do right up until the day that they do it. And the more they deny it, the more likely it is that they're contemplating it, because they don't want people to act in anticipation of what they're planning. They just want to do it. And so they've got to keep people in the dark. They've got to keep speculators at bay. So they've got to deny it. But, I think we're close. And you've got to be prepared for this eventuality, this turn of events. You've got to be prepared for a major change. From a global point of view, from an economic point of view, this is like the Ice Age, right, in change, where you have this major power that has dominated the world for 50, 60 years, and it's going to change. You got to be out in front of it. You got to ride this wave, not get clobbered by it, right? And that means getting out of the dollar. That means having foreign assets. And I'm not talking big out again. I'm not talking about gambling. I'm not talking about trying to find the big winners and buy small little companies. I'm talking about buying major utilities and real estate investment trusts. You can buy corporate bonds and government bonds, high quality stuff. We're looking for safety. We're not going abroad to gamble. If you want to gamble, keep your money in the United States. You're taking plenty of risk here. I'm looking to remove risk. Anyway, we're winding out the program. I thank everybody for listening. Thank the callers. Tune in again next week at the same time. Tell your friends about the program, Wall Street Unspun, the Midweek Market Update. Visit our website, www.europac.net, www.europac.net. Call us toll-free, 800-727-7922. There are brokers here now. Call 800-727-7922. Again, this is Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital. Speak to you all next week. Thanks for listening.